All right, my name's Jim Garrison, and I'm going to present, I think, the only remote sensing presentation in this session. Some work that I've been doing for the last few years under funding by NASA to look at a new type of microwave remote sensing instrument using signals of opportunity. I'll say a little bit more about what I mean by signals of opportunity. To measure root zone soil moisture, which is currently not a parameter that can be measured directly from satellite remote sensing. My colleagues at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center include Jeff Pietmeyer, who's also an engineer, Rajat Bindlish, who's a hydrologist, and Manuel Vega and Courtney Mills, who are also did various parts of the engineering design for this. My grad students are Yao-Cheng Lin and Benjamin Null, and Michael helped us out with some of the in-situ validation. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the importance of root zone soil moisture, specifically some applications in agriculture that are more relevant to this community. The proposal that we wrote for this instrument had a much broader scope, so we were looking at a possibility of a lot more, a much larger range of possible measurements for the application of root zone soil moisture. In making measurements below the surface, we need to go to lower frequencies in the microwave regime. So I'm talking about the importance of going down below about 500 megahertz, which is getting into what's known as P-band. And then I'm gonna talk about the difficulty in doing this and why to date there's no satellite-based instrument that operates in those frequencies. The instrument we developed has this weird acronym, SOOP-AD, Signals of Opportunity Airborne Demonstrator. So I will say a little bit about that, and then I'll talk about some ground-based experiments that we've done recently to kind of develop some more of the fundamental measurement physics for this instrument. Okay, root zone soil moisture, broadly defined, water in the top meter or so of the soil, where it is absorbed by plant roots, where it's a connection between the surface hydrology and deeper processes. It has many applications in terms of connecting precipitation and long-term availability of water, and in some of the model applications I've looked at, it can account for uncertainty in precipitation. The only way of really remotely sensing root zone soil moisture globally or over large regions is through microwave remote sensing, because microwaves can penetrate through the clouds, they can penetrate through vegetation, and they can go into the soil. And we look at either the reflectivity or backscatter, scattering cross-section, if they're dealing with the active system, or the emissivity. Signals of opportunity is kind of a mix between an active and a passive system, so we're going to use a little bit different terminology and a little bit different language in describing that interaction with the surface, but still the physics is essentially the same. Okay, so this just shows a few examples of applications to agriculture that may be improved with knowledge of roots on soil moisture in terms of drought forecasting and productivity models. So there'll be the importance of having a direct measurement of roots on soil moisture. Why do we need to go to lower frequencies? And I should say, when I say lower frequencies, I'm talking to in the microwave regime. To some people, 500 megahertz is still a very high frequency, but talking strictly in the microwave regime, 500 megahertz is a low frequency. So if I just do a simple model of penetration into a uniform medium, and I take one of my one of the soil moisture emissivity models and just look at the penetration depth, I can see that for let's say 2.3 gigahertz, which is S band, my penetration depth is a few centimeters. So if I go to L band, 1.5 gigahertz, which is very close to the frequency SMAP uses. SMAP is 1.4 gigahertz. We still get maybe 5 to 10 centimeters. If I go down to 260 megahertz, which is the frequency that I'm going to be using, we can penetrate down to 15 to 20 centimeters. Of course, all of this depends upon the type of soil, what the structure of the soil below the surface looks like, but just to give you an idea of the deeper penetration. Now, I said this is close to what SMAP uses. This is actually the frequency of GPS, because I began my work in signals of opportunity looking at reflections of GPS signals, and so all of these signals here are bands allocated to communications or navigation satellites, just for of interest. The 2.3 gigahertz is the satellite providing XM radio service. And I'm going to mostly talk today about this 260 megahertz, which is a Department of Defense communication satellite. Okay, so why is it difficult to use conventional microwave remote sensing below 500 megahertz? So if I look at either using an active radar, I will need to have an allocation to transmit on those frequencies. I'll need to have some protection that there's not other transmissions on those frequencies. And also, I'm going to need a large antenna. If I do passive measurements, all those things get much more important. In order to set the resolution on the surface, I'm going to need a huge antenna, because antenna roughly scales with wavelength. And I'm also going to need protection that nobody else is transmitting on those bands. And below 500 megahertz, VHF, UHF communications dominate those bands. So there's an enormous amount of interference of those bands. So basically, either active radars or passive radiometry really cannot be done easily at these frequencies. There's one current mission in development by ESA, the biomass mission, to map global biomass. It uses 435 megahertz. And it's an active system. In order to get a scientifically useful resolution on the surface, a 12-meter deployable antenna, that's in the class of a big science satellite mission of multiple hundreds of millions of dollars. We are looking at now going everything to small satellites and constellations of small satellites because of the budget considerations. Furthermore, it's very difficult to get spectrum allocations in these frequencies. So it turns out the current plan is that this 435 megahertz is not going to be able to be operated over North America or Europe. So they're essentially going to make measurements mostly in the developing world. And again, that's the only current example I'm aware of in development for microwave remote sensing in these frequencies. Currently, the lowest frequency that's practical for microwave remote sensing is L-band, which again is what SMAP and what SMOS operate on. Okay, so with this in mind, I've done some past research on signals of opportunity, and maybe I'll just say a little bit about what I mean by that. If I have an active radar, I have to provide the illumination, I have to provide a transmitter, or if I use passive radiometry, I'm essentially using techniques of radio astronomy, and I'm looking at the black body emission from the ocean or the land surfaces. Well, what if I combine the two? What if I use a passive system, but instead of looking at a black body emission, I look specifically at one of the transmitted channels from a communication satellite? So it's, in a sense, an active system, because I am using the techniques of radar, but it's a bistatic radar. I'm not providing my own transmission, but I'm operating within a band that's allocated for satellite communications, that's occupied by a very powerful signal, essentially the same thing that would jam any other type of measurement. I'm making use of a potential radio frequency interference source. Furthermore, the configuration is forward scatter, so almost all of my power of the transmitter is going into my measurement, unlike back scatter, where I'm looking at just a small amount that's reflected back. The resolution, I'm not going to go into the signal processing here, but this I think is a very important development, that the signal processing of the resolution is set by the signal bandwidth, not by the antenna. It's not set by a diffraction limit of the antenna. It's set by my ability to cross-correlate the direct and the reflected signal by the signal bandwidth. So with past work and signals of opportunity, we've mostly looked at the higher frequency transmissions in K-band, Ka-band, S-band. But when we wrote this proposal, we were looking at what could be done with these lower frequency satellites to maybe allow us for the first time to make microwave remote sensing measurements in P-band without all of these difficulties I mentioned before. So our hypothesis is that P-band signals of opportunity may offer the first opportunity to make global root zone soil moisture measurements from a space-borne remote sensing platform. So this shows the demonstration instrument we developed. It's on a V-200 aircraft. Maybe to first show the geometry, and this is not an actual, this is a superimposed image of the aircraft on the terrain. This isn't an actual picture of the aircraft in flight. But we have one beam looking at a direct line of sight to the communication satellite, and another beam looking at the reflected ray path. And by looking at the relative strength of those two, we can estimate the reflectivity at the surface. One of the things to keep in mind is that at these frequencies, if I would make a very narrow beam antenna, I still would need a large antenna in order to have a small beam. And that's not practical from an aircraft, and it's certainly not going to be practical from a satellite. So we use a technique of beam forming where we have these two patches that each one of these has is pretty much like a hemispherical beam. And we use some signal processing to steer one beam in the direction of the direct line of sight and then one beam in the direction of the reflected signal. We operate in both polarizations, right-hand circular and left-hand circular polarization. And we also, although I'm not really going to say much about it today, we also collect measurements at S-band. So by having dual frequency measurements, the two transmission satellites are not that far apart, we could possibly look at measurements of both the surface and the deeper soil moisture and use that in as part of a retrieval algorithm. We flew this on this B-200 aircraft operated by Langley Research Center, along with the SLAP instrument, which is the airborne analog for SMAP. So we also are collecting measurements at the same frequencies that SMAP operates at simultaneous to this experiment. The satellite, the transmitting satellites from geostationary orbit, so they're approximately fixed with respect to a point on the surface of the Earth. They are not in perfect geostationary orbits. They do drift a little bit. But we can design our flight paths to go perpendicular to the line of sight to the GPS transmit, to the geostationary transmitter. So this red vector is the direction to my transmitter. And we designed this flight path to go these parallel paths. We collect data. Since we didn't have enough funding to build two antennas, we collect data 50% of the time when we're flying in the east to west direction, and then we have some time to set up the next experiment on the return flight. Okay, we collected data during a flight campaign in Oklahoma at the Little Washita watershed, which is here. This is some of our flight planning software we developed to get all this geometry correct. We're beginning to produce some results of it since this is a new instrument. We're having to develop new level one and level two algorithms from scratch to process the data. But what I'm going to present is what we're calling our quick look data, which we do implement the null steering in the antenna beam. We have abilities to calibrate the antenna gain, which was a big part of the design, both from a fairly sophisticated numerical model of the aircraft, as well as some measurements of the antennas by themselves. But we're also doing a vicarious calibration over a lake where we have some maneuvers of the aircraft over the lake to look at refining our antenna model. And we take this calibration for now and just assume it's constant for the rest of the experiment. We are now eventually going to look at calibration during the flight. And our in-situ data was the network that was installed out there at Little Washita, which is at three depths. For now, I'm using a very simple model for the reflection of the surface of just the uniform soil moisture and the Fresnel coefficient. Later we're going to try to look at some type of a retrieval algorithm that can account for a profile in soil moisture. Okay, antenna calibration. The first thing we look for is hopefully we see a much brighter reflection over water than over land. That indicates at least it's working. And so this shows our flights over Lake Ellsworth, where you see this very high return over the water and pretty much lower returns over land. We see some river valleys here where we get high returns as well. During each day of the experiment, we went out and measured the temperature and salinity of this lake. So when we go to refine our calibrations, we should have some better measurements of what that reflectivity looks like. So now we wanted to compare the retrievals over the test sites. We got the data for those sites in Little Washita, and we at present are just looking at classifying into one of these soil types and using those properties, and then again later we're going to try to do a retrieval. This is an overlay of the 2 days of flights, and we can see the high returns over the riverbeds. And then we can zoom in again and kind of get an idea of what our resolution is. This is the size of each of these ellipses is representative of the resolution of the instrument, the Fresnel zone. Unfortunately, we can't really control nature the day we planned our flight. We had a little bit of rainfall the first day and then nothing for the rest of the flight, so we didn't have a lot of variation. But this was, again, funded as an instrument development. If we have data to basically show things are operating properly, that's probably good enough for now. But to help refine the algorithms, I'm going to skip a little bit ahead. To help refine the algorithms, kind of as the next stage to start developing a retrieval, I've started this experiment at the Purdue campus, where we have a site, Agronomy Center for Research and Education. We've installed the hydro probes at several depths, and we've started collecting data over bare soil for about 3 weeks. They planted corn, and then we've gone back to the last few weeks of the corn growth, and we're now collecting data under ground covered with a corn ground cover. This shows kind of what the sensing configuration at the Purdue site is. This is our resolution cell, our Fresnel zone. And I mentioned that the satellites move a little bit. They're not geostationary. So this represents the motion throughout 1 day of the footprint of the satellite. So we do move it back and forth a little bit. Our hydro probes are installed just outside of the sensing area, about in the middle between these two drainage tiles. We tried to set the geometry up so that for the most of the time our measurement did not land on one of the drainage tiles. And we're using a different transmission this time. I mentioned the 260 megahertz transmission earlier. It turns out these satellites are now transmitting a much wider bandwidth signal centered about 370 megahertz. And the advantage of using this very wideband signal is we have an inherent resolution of about in delay of about 15 meters. And what that sets up is our ability to distinguish the direct and the reflected signal. So as long as a path delay is more than 15 meters, we don't need to do this beam steering to separate those two signals. So maybe I'll just step back a little bit and just show what the antennas look like. This may be a little bit hard to see, but these are just simple dipoles. I mean, almost like an amateur radio antenna design. And again, we can get away with that, we believe, by using this wider band transmission. Okay, so far for the bare soil experiments, we also did not have a huge variation in soil moisture either. So we're hoping our sensitivity is good enough that we can at least detect this variation. But you see, when you get down to below the surface, like the 20 centimeters, you have a very small change. There's one rain event during that about 2.5 week period. Okay, so to summarize, we've completed our airborne testing of a combined P and S band signals of opportunity instrument. And in NASA's language, they'll refer to this as TRL-5, Technology Readiness Level 5. We show that we produce a reflectivity within the expected range of values, a high reflectivity over water bodies. We've just begun processing data for a calibration experiment. We looked at this wideband data under well-controlled conditions over bare soil. So I'd like to acknowledge that this was funded under a NASA grant, the Instrument Incubator Program. USDA helped us in getting access to and understanding the Little Washita test data, and this is our crew there during the week of the experiment.
We have time for one question.
Oh.
It's
the same. It's the same range of frequencies. Correct. It is not programmatically tied to that mission, but it's the same range of frequencies. We're going to be using similar models. Ours is entirely passive, and AirMOS is the same frequency that Biomass is using. So for an aircraft regional experiment, they can get the licenses and the allocation. Globally, it's very difficult to get a license to operate that frequency globally. So same physics, we might have broader applicability from a spaceborne instrument.
Thank you.
No, I have the same question.